was a stifling, scorching, sweltering night, and predictions of rain, however brief, were welcome. Air conditioners churned, fans rotated stale hot air, and transformers worked overtime. Around 4 p.m., lightning struck a Consolidated Edison substation, and for the next 24 hours, 7 million people were without power, 800,000 were stuck underground in subways, and tens of hundreds were stranded in elevators.
I was up in the office, the emergency generator roared on, and somebody shouted, blackout, you know.
And when the lights went out that night, the stark difference between New York's poorest and some of its richest was illuminated in ways rarely seen before.
One of the things about windows on the world right from the very beginning was its dress code. You had to have a jacket and tie. The general manager said to me, he can tell people they can take their jackets off. Take their jackets off, you know. Okay, you can take your jackets off. Next thing, the ties are coming off. Next thing, you know, people loosening their shirts. The general manager got up and immediately spoke. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody's getting champagne.
And in Harlem, there was this.
We had sticks, we had our hands, we'd grab people and just toss them out. We were so outnumbered, we'd push them back as far as we could. The people would only respond so far. And then they would start hurling rocks and bottles at us. And then it was a pitch battle in the street.
The impact of the 77 blackout had on New York was summed up in crime statistics.
3,176 people arrested, 132 policemen injured, 1,576 businesses looted or set on fire.
And damage exceeded $1 billion. But what the documentary is decidedly not about, the looters who stole washing machines, cars, and television sets during the first few hours after the transformers blew.
The much more interesting phenomenon is what occurs after that wave of sort of predictable crime.
Mark Sammels is executive producer of American Experience. He says the second wave of looting spotlighted the desperation of many poor residents and the class divisions that fractured and continue to fracture America's largest city.
Relatively ordinary people going in and taking things from stores. Who were these people? Why did they feel like their obligations as citizens were now suspended by the blackout, and that they could go in and take things from stores? What were they taking?
Pampers, toilet paper, food, on these carts, and we're pushing them home.
And when we looked at it closely, we were reminded that 12 years earlier, in 1965, there'd been another blackout in New York City. And it was a blackout that was marked by jovial gatherings and music and the purported birth rate skyrocketing 9 months later. And it had very sort of a fond, wistful, kind of sentimental remembrance of it.
Boston resident Josefina Vasquez recalls the blackout of 1965 vividly. A preteen then, Vasquez says she was trying to get home from a school study group that was meeting in New York suburbs.
And the parents of the girls in the study group actually drove me home. I'm sure they usually never drive through Bed-Stuy. But as they were taking me home, everything was dark. And certainly my own neighborhood, which had actually gone through the two riots in the mid-60s, it was so silent and quiet and just felt really safe because there was no one on the street.
So what happened in New York between 65 and 77?
What happened is that New York came apart at the seams.
Mark Sammels of American Experience.
Schools declined, police forces declined, people were laid off, the economy went spiraling downward.
For the first time since 1941, the nation's unemployment rate has gone above 9%.
In New York City, the rate of unemployment is much higher than it is nationally, higher than at any time since the Great Depression.
Race, says one commentator interviewed in the documentary, was not the dominant issue here.
Black people didn't go after white people. Latinos did not go after the Italians. It was more about class. We didn't have, so we went, not even after those who had, we went after their stuff.
The blackout of 77 also produced numerous scenes not captured in the reporting at that time. Former Channel 5 WCVB reporter Jim Boyd is from New York and he was dispatched to the city the morning after the blackout.
And of course, you know, being in New York, I had to check on family, and I checked with my mom. She was able to get a bus home, and so she arrives at the normal bus stop at the street corner near her building, and it's pitch dark. And she says there were teenagers in groups standing around, made her extremely anxious and very uncomfortable. The group approaches her and says, "Ma'am, can you tell us where you live? We live in this community. We want to do what we can to make sure that people are safe. And so if you don't mind, we'll gladly escort you to your building to make sure you get home safely."
When the lights finally came on, the ensuing narrative rarely touched on such good deeds. What is mainly recalled, the thousands of people who took looted items from more than 1,500 stores, and the overflowing numbers arraigned in court in the days after.
In the dark streets was a wild outburst of crime. Arson, looting, mugging.
The blackout of 1977 is being revisited days after a new report was released, highlighted by the Obama administration, showing that residential housing segregation and income inequality in New York and other cities have widened dramatically. Such were the conditions 38 years ago in New York when the lights went out, and for many of that city's poor, metaphorically speaking, have yet to come on again.
It's the city of rich and the city of the poor. And if you weren't in one of those neighborhoods, you know, if you were on the Upper East Side, enjoying a candlelit dinner on your roof, you had no idea what was going on all around you.
Philip Martin, WGBH Boston's local NPR. On the sidewalks,